Okay, so welcome everybody. This is Terry DeMeo. Today is May 23rd, 2016. This is Ethics Class, and I am with the October 26th, 2015 Life Coach Training Group. This is Section 3, the evening group. So did I get that all right?
Yes, you did.
I love getting it right, and I don't always, so thank you for double-checking me. So, a lot of material in this class, huh?
Yeah.
So, do you have any questions from the materials? I didn't see anything on the forum this morning when I checked. Any questions?
Hey, Terry, this is Rob.
Rob?
It's Russ.
Did I hear Rob?
Russ. This is Russ.
Russ.
Donna has a question as well, but I'll wait for
Hang on. Okay. Russ, are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm not. I'm on myself.
Oh, okay. Maybe you could put the mouthpiece a little closer to your mouth.
Does that sound better?
Your headset? Yes, it does. It's more clear now. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
So the ethics that we're following sound a lot like HIPAA to me. Are they based upon? Yeah, HIPAA.
No, HIPAA. No, really. They have nothing to do with HIPAA. HIPAA has to do with disclosures of the privacy of medical records, electronic medical records. And the disclosure of medical records to third parties, primarily for billing and sharing with other medical offices.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of similar things at the hospital where I work. Everything you said on the recording sounded a lot like the privacy that we follow for very closely for patients.
Well, okay, privacy, a right to privacy always belongs to the person whose record it's about. So in that sense, there is a similarity. But from there, these are very, very different concepts. If you've ever, and believe me, I wrote a HIPAA disclosure for a physician. I used to administrate a physician's office and helped out some other offices back in the day when I was doing that. And those disclosures are quite different. They are disclosures that the person signs, but beyond that, no, this is nothing to do with HIPAA, and it's a very different set of concepts. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, yes, someone else had a question.
Hey, Trey, this is Donna.
Donna,
I had two
yeah.
questions.
Okay.
The first one is we talk about being concerned about someone harming themselves. I fully understand that. What if you had someone who you found out was cutting themselves? So they're not intending to be fatal, but they are hurting themselves. Does that fall into the same category?
No, it does not fall into the same category as a possible suicide, where you've got a very specific and concrete investigation that you make, and based on that investigation, you may or may not call in emergency services. If somebody is cutting themselves, my understanding, and I've never worked with anybody cutting themselves, but I've worked with the parents of young adults doing this, and my understanding is that it's not intended to be a suicide attempt, although it could be. Somebody could get so depressed that they would move beyond that. If I learned that a client was cutting themselves, I would immediately explain to them that I am not trained to handle their situation, and they absolutely must get a consultation with a mental health practitioner, and I would only work with them if the mental health practitioner okayed it from there on. Because coaching can ramp up somebody's anxiety. If you know how uncomfortable it is sometimes. How do you react when you believe the thought that your mother didn't love you? you know, it can provoke and amp up our anxiety, at least temporarily. So we want to make sure we're dealing with people who are really healthy and intact and coachable. And in my opinion, at least, somebody cutting themselves falls way outside that parameter. Does that make sense?
I agree. I just didn't know about the harming themselves. If that someone's in the same definition as suicide. Okay. My second question is, when you refer someone, you know, you suggest that they see a therapist, do you typically have some names for them if they appear lost, or do you just, they need to find their own?
Well, my coaching practice is worldwide. You know, I barely know any therapists here in Miami where I am. I can't possibly find a therapist for people. And I want them to, I want them, hear me out a little bit further on this, Donna. I want them to feel comfortable with the person that they're choosing. Now, if they were right here in my town and I absolutely knew somebody that was really good and well suited for whatever the problem was, I would pass that name along. But I work with so few people here in town, and they tend to be lawyers, and you know, they're functioning people. They never have issues that would need a referral, or so far so good. So I've never dealt with that. But I don't want that to be my responsibility. I want that to be the client's responsibility. And if they don't do it, I back out. I don't continue to work with, or I wouldn't. The few times that I have had to make those kind of referrals, the clients were very understanding because I presented it to them like it's my limitation. I don't, and I think I said this in the class recording, I don't put it on the client. It's like, you're so bad that I can't work with you. I don't ever want to have a client feeling worse about themselves. I always say, I'm not trained to deal with this, and I care about you and your progress too much to just keep pretending that we're doing something here when we're not. Does that make sense, Donna?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate that.
You're very welcome. So anyone else with a question right out of the box? Is anyone running into any kind of issues that are coming up that might raise ethical questions as you're coaching? How is it working with friends and family? Or are you?
This is Gina. I can comment on something.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted to mention, I don't know if you have additional support for this or something I should be doing different, but I talk to a lot of parents that have kids with autism because we have a lot of stress. And I am very upfront that I am not telling you to go off your medication. I'm not telling you to take your child off the medication. That is between you and your doctor.
Absolutely.
I'm very upfront with telling them that before we do anything, and probably almost every session.
Uh-huh. Why would it come up every session?
It just kind of depends on the client because they know I have a son with autism, and I honestly, we do supplements. I don't give him medication, so they may ask me a lot of questions.
Yeah. And you're comfortable answering those questions. This is the supplements that I give him, and this is what I observe.
Well, yeah, and I just, you know, this is our experience. Again, I am not telling you to go off medication. That's between you and your doctor, so that's kind of how it comes up.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that's okay. Well, I can share with you what I'm doing, but I want you to understand I took off my coaching hat when I'm telling you this, and I'm just sharing this information with you from one parent to another.
Right.
You know, X, Y, Z, here's what I do. Yeah, when I depart from coaching to mentoring, I identify that for the client. I will say, you know what, this is outside the purview of coaching, but it sounds like you could use some help here. And so I'm going to mentor you a little bit because this is an issue I've dealt with. So will that take care of it? You didn't really have a question, huh?
No, I thought you just asked for comments. And so I'm a nurse,
uh-huh.
So I'm kind of used to giving that I'm not telling you to go off your meds speech.
Right. Now, as a nurse, you understand you've got to follow all the nursing board rules, even when you're coaching. You have to follow the rules of your license at all times.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Anyone with any kind of license has to follow the rules that are set up by the licensing agency. So doctors, lawyers, psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed clinical social workers, family therapists, nurses, chiropractors, whatever you've got, you follow those rules, even though they're not rules that pertain to us as coaches. But you don't want to get sideways with your licensing boards. So be sure you pay attention to that. Okay. Anybody else with a question? We're not just going to do Q&A the whole time, but I just like to take those first.
This is Saskia. I have a question.
Okay, tell me your name again.
Saskia.
Saskia, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of think, well, I'll just say, what would you do if one of your clients is talking about a family member who you think is very suicidal?
Okay.
You know what I mean? But they don't want to. They're kind of stuck in, like, the suicidal person doesn't want any other input except for from the one person. But there's, I don't know, it's just,
was,
I mean,
is
I,
this
I
an actual, is this an actual scenario?
Yeah, it's actually my, it's, okay, it's my sister and it's her son.
Your sister has a suicidal son?
Well, it's that borderline kind of talking, but I don't, when I was listening to it today, just listening to kind of the questions you ask, it's like, it seems like he's kind of borderline. I don't quite know, but she says he refuses to go.
Borderline. You don't mean borderline personality disorder. Borderline what?
So there's a hopeless feeling, but it's not as if, you know, he says, so she's relaying this information to me, so I feel like I'm once removed.
Right.
And I'm just imagining if this were a coaching situation. So it's not exactly a coaching situation because it's family, but if this were the case, and you're worried about the person they're talking about, what would you suggest doing?
What are you doing with your sister?
Well, just talking her through it, I mean, and listening right now, it's kind of confounded because she's having a hard time because he will only talk to her. And so it feels like a lot of weight on her shoulders.
How old?
And worry. He is 19.
Okay. So if this woman was my client,
mm-hmm.
Here's how I would handle it. And I would do it. You see, you guys, so much, and I know I'm not the first instructor that has told you this, but so much of the result that you get with a client depends on the energy that you bring with it. And
mm-hmm.
when your energy is confident and your communication is clear, people will pretty much do what you ask them to do. So if I was this client, I would try to find out why she keeps playing this role with him. Because
yes.
it sounds like her stress level is enough that she's over her head with this. She doesn't feel secure that she can handle this. This is
yes,
a dynamic
completely.
That has been yeah, this is a dynamic that has been going on for years and years and years. You know, it depends on how urgent the situation is, but I would try to gently coach her to the place where she can have the conversation that needs to take place with her son. And that is, sweetheart, I love you. I'm here for you. I will always be here for you. And we're going to get you some help. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, if this was my kid, this is how I would handle it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know that it's like you spoke, was on the call too. It's like she hasn't asked me to be a coach, and so it's family member, and it's
right.
just,
right.
But I think you're totally right there in this
right.
dynamic where she's taking on too much.
Right.
Are well, anyway,
guys,
I think you.
Let me look at your class materials here. Hold on a second. I'm going on your forum to look at the class materials for this class, and I think we gave you this recording. Ethics, here we go. You know, we set these things up so far in advance. Okay. We did a special call last year. Are you guys admitted to Coach Spot yet?
I don't think so. I haven't done it.
Okay.
Yeah, we can get onto Coach Spot.
You can get onto Coach Spot?
Yeah. You have to request.
You have to register.
But they will. Yeah.
Okay. So here's what you're going to do, Saskia.
Okay.
And I would recommend you do it pretty quickly. You're going to
okay.
register for Coach Spot. And right
okay.
there somewhere in the opening part of Coach Spot, you know, there's a welcome. There are ethics materials. And most
okay.
of them look familiar. They're exactly what we gave you for class. But there's
mm-hmm.
one more recording there. And we didn't give it to you because we just didn't want to overwhelm you. So let me see
okay.
here if I can get onto Coach Spot. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll post it on the forum after class. I don't want to take up a lot of class time. But
okay, perfect.
And what I'm not remembering is the name of what we named this particular call. But there is a psychologist, Erin McEwen Seavey, and I did a special call on suicide last year. And we covered all of these points that you're talking about. We talked
okay.
about how to talk to somebody in your life who is suicidal, how to talk to somebody, a family member, where this issue goes on. And Erin is a therapist. She is very, very knowledgeable and experienced in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I really recommend that call to any of you who want to learn more about this issue. But it was too much. You know, you guys already have plenty to listen to and master here. But anybody who wants to go a little further with this question, or you have somebody in your life who is potentially considering death by suicide, It's an excellent, excellent recording. Okay?
That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And the reason I'm asking you to do that is that it will give you, I think, the confidence to talk to her very directly, which is what this is going to need. Because if she doesn't do anything and he's really that despondent and hurt himself, or worse, took his life, she's going to feel awful. And I'm not saying you tell her that, but it's to impress on her the seriousness of this. And if he won't get help, then I would tell her that she's the one that needs help and she should be working with a therapist. Or, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But a lot of this is going to depend on the energy that you bring to it. Now, while we're on the topic of suicide, let me go over something. There is a question on your certification review, for those of you who are going to go for certification, about suicide. And there is a point that people routinely mix up, so I want to make sure you guys understand. And also, this is a really important issue, and I want you to understand it very thoroughly. If somebody mentions that they're thinking about taking their life, or mentions suicide, or is kind of getting worse and worse with depression and or hopelessness and the things that we talk about. So any of those three things, their behavior and their talk, they're directly mentioning it. Somebody with a past history of suicide is even more at risk. What was the third thing I said? My mind went blank there for a second. Okay, if they mention it by name, or if they are, you know, talking about how hopeless and despondent they are, then you are on alert to determine whether they are at increased risk of death by suicide. Okay, so step number one, they're acting hopeless, they're sounding hopeless, or they're mentioning something that suggests suicide. I'm going to take my life, or I'm thinking about killing myself. You need to take the following steps. You ask those questions that are on the light from the lifeline. Are you considering harming yourself? Do you have a plan to harm yourself? Do you have the present means to harm yourself? And if you don't know already, have you ever tried to commit suicide before? If the answer to those questions is yes, you are going to call for emergency services, either by getting them hooked up with the lifeline or by dispatching 911 if you can't do that. And this is one of those, go directly to jail, you know, in Monopoly. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Don't go around the board anymore. That's your direct action. If, however, and this is the part that I want you guys to get that people aren't getting, if they answer no to those questions, but something alerted you to the fact that you needed to ask those questions, don't stop there. Take into account changes in their behavior, sleeplessness, any events going on in their life that could have caused despondency, how much pain they are in. So even though they haven't directly mentioned it, if your body compass is suggesting, wow, you know, I don't like this, continue to talk to them and get a read on whether they are at increased risk for suicide. And if they are, you are going to take emergency action. Is that clear? Everybody got that? Because it's not just the answers to those questions. Yes, those questions are direct triggers for action. But even if they say, no, I don't have a plan, no, 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 you still might want to take, you know, take action, there's a judgment call to be made in that situation. Okay? You guys clear about that? Yes, yes, no, no?
Yes, yes.
Maybe, maybe? Okay. And I will tell you, I have asked those questions a couple of times during my coaching career, and I'm aware because of our forums that we've had a couple of coaches in the past that have run into this. It's rare, but it does happen. And let me tell you something. Asking those questions and hearing, no, I'm not thinking about taking my life, and no, I don't have the means to do it, and no, I haven't really even thought about it and planned it out, was such a relief that I had a specific kind of like a methodology to follow. And, you know, when I heard no, no, no to those questions, I continued to talk about the despondency and the hopelessness. And I actually had a client a couple of years ago who was seeing a therapist and a psychiatrist and me. And yet she came to one of my calls very despondent like that. She convinced me, and I believed her, that she did not have a plan or the means and was not thinking about taking her life, but she sounded so low, I insisted that she get into, that she, number one, tell her therapist what was going on, and number two, most importantly, get an appointment with her psychiatrist for a medication checkup. Because when people are taking psychoactive medications, often they will kind of max out for a while. They'll work for a while, and then an adjustment has to be made. And she did not do it right away, and I called her daily until she got in to see the psychiatrist. Because remember, I was dealing with somebody depressed. So when you're depressed, you don't feel like doing too much. It seemed like a lot of effort to get into the psychiatrist. She did. The psychiatrist agreed, changed her medication, and she's fine. She was fine, and we continued the coaching relationship. So, you know, that was kind of a common sense solution. If I had had that happen where somebody sounded despondent like that, and they weren't seeing a therapist and they weren't with a psychiatrist, I would make the referral, and I would not coach them anymore until they did it. And they got the green light that it was okay to work with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, when I make a referral like that, I always, you know, make sure the person knows I care about them, that, you know, so they don't get a sense that I'm abandoning them like everybody else in their life has. Connection between people makes all the difference in the world. But I want them to know that I take this so seriously and that I'm not trained to deal with what they're dealing with. And I've never had anybody refuse to get a consult when I've asked them to do that. Okay? So, let's talk about other kinds of danger to self. We talked about cutting, so somebody is, you know, thinking about harming themselves, but it's not in a fatal way, refer out. If somebody is talking about hurting somebody else, I'm going to kill my kid, I'm going to kill my husband, and you think they mean it, you need to get with a lawyer right away. This is not it's a very tricky area, and you need somebody who can think that through. Now, Renee, the other ethics instructor, and I are always available for consults on your ethics issues, and we do it for free, no problem. You can shoot me an email, and I'll get to you as quickly as I can if you've got something going on. But if it's urgent, then you know, and it's this kind of situation, you need some good legal advice. And that's what I'm going to tell you after we talk it through, but I can help you identify the issues. Okay? So that's when a client is possibly a danger to other people. And it wouldn't be a bad idea to put all this in your coaching agreement. What else? What are some other big issues here? When a third party is paying? Oh, I know what I wanted to talk to you about before that. Working with friends and family. Well, Saskia, I know you're not coaching your sister in a formal relationship, but how does it feel to be talking to your sister on a very tender, important issue like that?
Yeah, I think that's I resonated today because there's this I feel a kind of a like don't go there with me type, but like there's it's not the same as coaching as when I'm just talking with my sister because I want to. Yeah, so it's I think that I would prefer I don't think I will coach family or friends.
Yeah.
There's just some like fuzzy lines that seem difficult, maybe.
I agree. I'll tell you what. My son called me last night. He and his girlfriend broke up. And I'm a really good coach, but I couldn't coach him. I was like, I was so attached to what was going on, and I couldn't be neutral about it. Yes, he called me because he wanted his mom. He wanted to talk to me. It was helpful. He felt better after we talked. But could I go into that neutral place that you go into as a coach where you're detached from the outcome? I couldn't do it. I just simply couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I emailed a couple of coaches today that I think he might work well with. And I told him, you know, I'll talk to you as much as you want to get you through this. And I also want you to have a formal relationship with either a coach or a therapist. And he was happy. He was grateful for the he was grateful for my telling him that. And he said, yeah, it does help to have somebody to talk to.
Yeah, I think for me, I noticed too, like you said, I think that my patterns and places that probably my blind spots come up more with family because
of course.
I just get stuck in those old patterns, so I'm not the best coach for them either, and it's
right.
Probably like triggering things I don't even know that are going on.
Yeah, absolutely, and how wise of you to recognize that. So, you know, and it depends on the intensity. I mean, it sounds like you've got some intense stuff going on in your family. If it's simply, you know, something a little lighter, I have a really good friend, and she calls me from time to time because she is the executive director of a nonprofit, and she will have a cantankerous employee from time to time. And I can coach her through how to deal with the employee. You know, I'm not so invested there. And I want her, you know, I feel more like she's a normal client in that situation. But with my son and him being in pain, oh, it was just a totally different feeling. Yeah. So, again, there's the body compass giving direction. Okay for this, not okay for that. And the more you get your stories out of the way, the more accurate your body compass will be and the more excellent a tool it will be in guiding you. So, Okay, so that is that situation. And the other one I wanted to talk to you about, let me go back to my outline here. Oh, when a third party is paying. This one happens with some amount of frequency, depending on your practice. Yesterday I got an email from a former client. I haven't worked with her for about 3 years. She asked me to work with her daughter. There's a potential conflict of interest there. Do you see why? Does anybody get what the conflict might be? Nobody want to take a stab at it?
Would they be making comparison?
What?
Would they be making comparison?
Well, what I want to make sure of is that the coaching issue isn't something like my mom is an idiot and mean and I hate her guts. Because you see, my client is that mom. And if they're at cross purposes, I'm not going to be able to work with the mom anymore, my former client. Now, what it turned out to be is that this girl has stress related to college, and she's gained weight. She went away to college, and she gained weight. And she is a very self-aware young woman. Her mom is one of our coaches, in fact, so... that made me really happy to hear, you know, this beautiful young woman. I worked with her this morning about the stress that she's raining down on herself over gaining 5 pounds her freshman year in college. And so we had a great session this morning. It had nothing to do with her mother. So I made sure that there wasn't anything like that. And then, of course, I make sure that the mom knows that the only thing I'm going to impart to her is whether I'm coaching, you know, how much I'm coaching her, the dates, and whether she shows up for the appointment. And I made sure that I said that to the client as well. I said, you know, your mom and I are friends. We've known each other for a long time. We've worked together. And... nothing you say to me is going to get back to her. And I mean it. And it won't. So afterwards, the mom sent me an email, and she said she was so happy. She likes me. She wants to work with me more. And she said, work with her as much as you want. You know, she would pay for the bills. And I just wrote back, and I said, thanks. I'll talk to her about how often we should work together. Because that's, you know, now I'm assured my bill is going to get paid, but it's the daughter's responsibility and place. I want to have that conversation with the daughter about the frequency. Okay? So, here's what I want to do. Everybody take out your... take out the ethical decision-making model. And let's see. Okay. Now, this is going to be a conversation that we're having, okay? So I want some participation. This actually happened to one of our coaches who consulted with me about what to do. Your client is a divorced mother. She has been working with you weekly for 2 months on parenting issues and post-divorce recovery. The divorce occurred 2 years ago. It was a very contentious, acrimonious, nasty divorce. Mom says the husband, the ex, was physically and verbally abusive to her during the marriage. There are two children. One is 9, one is 14. The 14-year-old is angry, and they live with the mom. She's angry with her mom. She's argumentative at home, and the client says she is siding with her father. She accuses mom of hating her father, which is probably true. The client denies speaking poorly about her ex in front of the kids, but a lot of the coaching sessions involved her angry feelings and thoughts about her ex. And, for instance, she talked about an incident where the father showed up at the kid's school unannounced, and the client was so frightened she hid from him and then asked an aide to accompany her to her car. So only seeing him was enough to get a big response like that. Now mom says, will you coach my 14-year-old about her anger, her relationship with her, and her relationship to the her mom? So the question is, would you take on this daughter as a client? And we're not going to just start with yes or no and why. We're going to actually analyze this by going through the model. So the model starts out with, what are the facts? Do I have all the facts? Can anybody think of anything else we might want to know about this? Is there any more information that we need?
I would want to know if the kids go visit the father.
Okay. You'd want to know more about the visitation with the father. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What else would you want to know, or might you want to know? Can anybody think of anything else?
What is the concern the kid is coming to for coaching?
Well, the mother's concern is, you know, she's out of control, angry.
Okay.
I'm worried about her relationship with her father, and our relationship is terrible. So basically, the mom is explaining that the coaching goal is to help her with her anger and her relationships with her parents.
Got it.
I'd want to know if they've ever had any type of group therapy.
Any,
you know, she's saying therapy now, or have they ever?
Okay. Good.
So I guess I would like to know the severity of the abuse, or has there been any police reports or any kind of legal action, restraining orders or anything like that?
Okay. Now, understand that the issue is, are you going to coach this daughter? So, you know, I'm not saying that that's not something to be curious about, but the abuse happened to the mother, not the children, and it happened 2 years ago. It ended 2 years ago during when the marriage ended. Okay. So it's a little bit removed, but, you know, certainly no harm in asking.
I would be curious to know whether the daughter is perceiving the situation as the same. Does she see herself as angry? Does she see herself as needing someone to talk to?
You can bet the daughter will have a very different perspective on this. But go ahead, because I think you're on it. You would want to know if the daughter what?
Well, and so if the daughter was partially receptive to being coached, but if she even saw the situation remotely the same as the mother did.
Yes. Now, I would ask the mother directly, have you talked to your daughter about this? And does she want coaching? That's the first thing I want to know. Because if she says no, you know, that pretty much, you can't drag her in against her will. I would, if I was going to have a conversation with the daughter, I would want to know from the daughter what her perception of this problem is. And just like with my client this morning, the mom emailed me what she thought the problem was and why she wanted me to coach her daughter, and I said I'd be glad to. But the first thing I asked my client this morning, you know, and I said, does she want to be coached? That was my question, and the mom said, yes, she does. The first thing I asked her this morning was, tell me how I can help you. What is it that you would like to achieve with coaching? I wanted to hear from her what the problem was. So very good, very good. Okay, now we have number two, the who. Who is involved? Who might be impacted by what I choose to do, whether taking on this client or not? So who could be impacted? I mean, who have we got?
The mom.
We've got the mom. Who else?
The father.
The father.
The daughter, of course.
The daughter. Uh-huh. There's one more person.
The sibling?
Yes, there's a sibling. So those are the people that can be impacted by this. Okay, what are our concerns here? What are these concerns about? What ethics or values are raised? Let's take it that far. So what are we concerned about here? Remember, our issue is, are we going to take this client on?
Well, I think we have a potential for a conflict of interest here. If the daughter's main concern is my mom is a big jerk, and I really want to talk about how much a problem my mom is, then, right, that's the similar situation that you described with your your coachee this morning.
Right, right. Well, it's a very different scenario than my
– Right, that you were concerned it could be, that you were concerned
exactly.
if it was going to be about –
Right. I wanted to rule that out right away. Yeah. What else am I concerned with here?
Well, I think that this is a much larger problem than just a coaching session. This young girl has anger issues. I think it sounds like she would benefit perhaps from seeing a therapist, somebody that's completely separate from the family, and I that just seems clear to me.
Mm-hmm. So she might benefit from a therapist.
Before
so
some
deeper
things happen or begin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you talked about something about, you know, taking on something above my pay grade. That would
yeah.
Be-
Yeah.
I get a sense of that.
My feeling.
Right.
What about her safety, the daughter's safety?
Well, as far as we know, that's not an issue, but, you know, why are you concerned about that?
Well, because that was, I think it was Alan, it is above my pay grade. It would not be something I would feel, well, because if the mother was abused, could the daughter have been also? I mean,
yeah,
who knows?
That's the issue is that the daughter is siding with the father and dissing the mother.
Yeah,
so,
but we don't know why.
We have no evidence that dad is violent with the daughter. Now.
Right.
here's what I think and what my concern is. Mom wants me to work with the daughter to get her in line, to get her backed off and chilled out, and seeing eye to eye with the mother, right? I mean, that's just kind of human nature. I want you to work with her and you know, beat some sense into her. I want you to work with her and help her see things my way. That's a big concern that I would have here, too, is that mom's got an agenda, and she's not going to be really happy. She's going to be trying to push that agenda. And, there, you know, with that kind of conflict at home, the conflict of interest is going to come up over and over and over again. Hey, she acted out again last night. What the hell are you doing with her anyway? You can see how the mom would start to get annoyed at me if it wasn't working, right? So that's a concern. Do we have a confidentiality issue here?
Well, yes, a huge one.
How so?
Well, mom tells me something and daughter tells me something, and mom wants to know. And perhaps daughter tells you something that you don't know, and that's something about the father that the mother's not telling you. Or I mean, it can get very amped up and, you know, convoluted very quickly.
Right. So,
and you don't know who's telling what.
Mm-hmm. Theoretically, there are some confidentiality issues. I don't see one yet. We don't have one directly yet, but this is the kind of situation where we could have lots of confidentiality issues. Right?
Agreed,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and especially if with the dad being violent in the past, he's got a history, so you don't know what will happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. And dad doesn't have a voice here either. So we don't know
his side.
We don't know.
We don't know his side. We know what our client says. Now, number four, what are the options? And we want you in these scenarios to always find at least three options, keeping confidentiality in mind. So what are some possible things we can do? And on your ethical decision-making model, there are some suggestions. Do nothing, get more information, make a referral. We talked about making a referral, right?
Yes.
Refer the daughter for therapy.
Mm-hmm.
We could refer the mom for family therapy with or without the dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could talk to her about that. What are the other things we could do?
I think I would at least want to speak to the daughter and inquire, you know, how do you feel? Are you interested in getting some support? If so, what would that look like? And then I might be able to refer them to the appropriate person based on, you know, talking with the daughter and the daughter's perception.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is Russ. Shouldn't there also be some kind of agreement that whatever is shared between me and the daughter, I do not share with the mother, because I would maintain that similar amount of privacy for the daughter, just to keep her safe?
Yeah. And you would want to protect confidentiality if you were doing option number three, speaking to the daughter. You would want to make sure, you know, okay, mom, I would like to speak to your daughter. It's going to be a confidential conversation. I'm going to tell her that, and I won't be able to share with you what she tells me. That right there might back this mom off. She might go away at that point. Well, I'm not really comfortable with that. But definitely that's part of what you tell the mom if you are going to speak to the daughter. Okay. Now, so we've got three options here, right? Your comment about confidentiality, I'm just going to wrap that into the speaking with the daughter option. So, one, refer the daughter for therapy. Two, refer the mom and the daughter for family therapy. Three, speak to the daughter and get some more information. Now, we're going to follow each of those options out to their consequences, and then we're going to begin to see what makes the most sense given your training, your pay grade, your values, your ethics, your body compass, and so forth. So let's think through what will happen. Number one, refer the daughter for therapy. What are the possible consequences?
Well, there could be a positive outcome with someone who can handle, who can guide the child through her anger and at least, talk her down through her anger and find the root of it and help her with that.
Mm-hmm. So she could get help. What's another possible outcome here?
Well, I guess my concern is that if she is, you don't know if she's talking to the dad or what's going on. She could be more hostile towards the mom. I mean, you don't know.
As a result of what? Of referring the daughter for therapy?
Yeah. I mean, you don't. Yeah, because if the therapy doesn't work out or it gets back to the dad, I just see all kinds of problems.
Well, in a divorce situation, the mother probably has a duty to advise the father that she is, you know, and maybe sometimes they, depending on the custody order, she may have to get his consent. And I've got a client now. Let me think how this is coming up. My client's girlfriend is in a divorce, and the ex-husband will not let the mom send the children to therapy. And it's a great big mess. It's been going on and on and on. And they're dead in the water because the temporary order in the case says that they have joint custody and those kind of decisions have to be made jointly. Okay, what outcome can you see by suggesting that the mom have her seen by a therapist? I can think of one.
She may get everything she wants. She may get exactly what she wants. The daughter, calm and able to...
Yeah, we said that, a positive outcome, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I can think of a couple of other things that could happen as a result of my saying, Mom, take your kid to a therapist. Number one, Mom doesn't do it. They don't get help. And what's another possible scenario?
Mom drops you as a client.
Mom drops me. Very good. Yes. Mom is ticked off because I'm not getting in line with her agenda.
Exactly.
I'm refusing to help in her crusade to the bad guy, you know, and you got to kind of keep an open mind when you're working with people, particularly in a divorce situation. There are lots of high feelings that can linger for years and years and years. And, you know, it's very often that clients will see this in terms of victim and perpetrator. So, you know, some skilled coaching can diffuse a situation like that, but it's possible that something like this would tick Mom off. And, you know, then we're over there taking sides with the husband is the way she might interpret that. So Mom might drop us. Okay. We said our second possibility was to refer the mom and the daughter for family therapy. Is that one different? Do we have the same concerns, the same possible outcomes?
Well, I always think of therapy as a safe place for communication to open up. I mean, the mom and daughter may actually have a constructive dialogue if there's somebody there to referee and actually talk about real issues versus just arguing feelings.
Okay. So there could, again, be a positive outcome. Again, they might not go.
Yeah.
I can think of another one that's a little different from the first one.
What we include the father therapy?
I would certainly recommend that they speak to the therapist about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this mother, remember, she's so afraid of him that she hid from him when she saw him at school.
Right.
We don't know whether that's irrational behavior or whether that was really rational behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the therapist can help the mother approach that issue. So I think you ought to talk to a family therapist and talk to that therapist about the possibility of all three of you working together. Another possible outcome here is that they get such positive results that the mom doesn't need us as a coach anymore. Remember, these are the same issues, post-divorce kind of recovery. So there's a pocketbook issue for us. Now, what happens when there's an issue between what's in the client's best interest and what's in our best interest?
Well, the client's best interest is our best interest. That's my point of view.
Well, our best interest insofar as doing the right and ethical thing, but it might hurt us in the pocketbook. But we remember we have what's called a fiduciary duty to our clients. We have to put their interests above ours. That's just the way of it. So
well, and then it comes back to us too. Referrals. Maybe they come back. They'd be very impressed with how you handled it, and we would get referrals.
Could be. You never know. You never know. I just want to make the point that when there's a conflict between what's in your best interest and what's in the client's best interest, the client's interest always controls. Okay. The last possible thing that we could do is we could speak to the daughter. We could have a conversation with the daughter. So how might that go? What are our concerns there?
Even though that's really what I would do, is I would talk to the daughter, I think I would have to be prepared that that could really open up a can of worms. Because if the daughter's perspective was something like, well, actually, you know, my mom is, you know, nutty as a fruitcake. Dad's great. My mom is portraying him, you know, blah, blah, blah. My mom's actually abusing us. She's, you know, it could really head us off in a different direction.
Uh-huh. So what would you do then? How do you handle
it? Exactly. Exactly. What would I do? You know, I guess it depends on how what the daughter said. You know, if she's reporting actual abuse from the mother, then I'm put into a situation where, you know, I'm a teacher, so we're mandated reporters. You know, if there was actually evidence of physical abuse from her mother, then I would have to report that at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have to consider
whether or not I believe what, you know, if there's no evidence of abuse, it's just her story, then I'm not sure. I guess, I don't know. I'm not sure what I would do.
So, anybody, good. This is all really good stuff, you guys, and in particular what you're saying here. These are valid things to think about. So what else might happen as a result of talking to the daughter? Besides, now we've got a totally different viewpoint of our client. Maybe she's not as amazing and wonderful as we thought. This daughter sounds pretty convincing.
Well, I also think the daughter might just say, I don't trust you anyway because you're mom's coach.
Right. So that's another possible outcome. The daughter is going to sit, you know, fold her arms across her chest and say, I'm not talking to you, lady. Who was it that said they wanted to talk to the daughter? We had a couple of people that wanted to speak to the daughter here.
I did, the can of worms person.
Oh, okay.
I was devil's advocating myself.
Uh-huh. Still want to talk to her?
Yes, definitely.
Uh-huh. How come?
Because I really do feel that if she's invited me to have a conversation with the daughter, then, I mean, you know, to coach the daughter, I think that it's really important to ask the daughter, you know, A, see if she's receptive. Does she fold her arms across her chest and refuse to speak to me? Or is she open to coaching? And if we're having that conversation, to ask what her perspective is. I could not even make a referral, I don't think, accurately if I was only going on, you know, here's a child that's being abused by her. But, you know, I don't know what her father's role in all of this is. So I just simply want more information before.
The mother has not accused the father of abusing the daughter. The mother's
right. No.
Abused.
But I mean, right. I don't know if the mother's story is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, her version of it is accurate.
Your mind is open to coaching the daughter and coaching the mother.
No, I probably would not. But I would want to talk to the daughter because if I got more information, I could make a better referral. I really don't think I would want to put myself in the position of coaching both because I agree with you that I think mom has an agenda here. But I would want to know more to make a good referral to whether I'm going to refer the daughter to a coach or to a mental health professional or to them to family therapy or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Very thoughtful. Anyone else have any other perspective on this? Okay. Where do we think we're aiming now after going through all this? What do we think the best option is? Anyone?
This is Russ. The number one thing I think of when I deal with conflict resolution is I ask all sides what they want to do. I mean, the mother would want me to coach her daughter, okay, but maybe what would the daughter want? And when I talk to both one of them or both of them, not at the same time, it would be, what do you want to do? Does this sound like a better option to you?
Wait, stop. Your voice is really garbling. You would talk to both of them, and then what did you say?
I would talk to the mother and the daughter separately. I would say, okay, here's what I'm getting. I want to get your side, her side, and I want to know what you want to do, and then I want to talk to the daughter and find out what she wants to do.
Okay.
And then that's where I would make my recommendations. Because I can almost see a lot of trust issues being put in danger, especially if the mother trusted me at one point. And to suddenly take on her daughter raises a couple of red flags with me. So I would want to do this in a safe way that's both safe for them and for me.
Right. But do you work in conflict resolution?
We're talking about young kids, but in the martial arts, when somebody loses it, there's conflict. You find out what you want to do. It's right. Almost a simple thing that comes to my mind easily. What do you want to do? Do you want to fight, or do you want to, do this in a calm, more grown-up way?
Right.
It almost brings it down to the basics of human nature for me.
I get that. Here's what goes through my mind. If I'm thinking through these possible outcomes, and I already have serious concerns about working with this daughter and losing my client, because remember, I can often make huge changes in a family relationship by working with one person. I don't really need to work with two of them. I've had marriages turn around. I've had parent-child relationships turn around where I'm just working with one side. Even when my client is insisting that they've got halos over their head and that the other one is the bad guy. I don't say it that bluntly, and it takes some time to untangle this. But I'm wondering, and this is me, why I would bother talking to the daughter at all in light of all of these issues that we've raised. Because I only want to talk to her if I think there's a possibility that I would work with her. And based on the conflict between them, my own opinion is that they need separate people, or they need to be together with a family therapist. But does that make sense, Russ?
Yes, it does. In fact, you just brought home something that just happened to me recently with a friend. So, yes, I understand.
Yeah. You see, I don't want to take up the daughter's time. I don't want to stir anything up. If I know going in, I'm not going to work with this daughter. I'm not going to work with this girl. There's too much hostility, and the potential for things getting worse and somebody not trusting me is so great. When I do couples coaching, which I do as a relationship coach, I will only work with both parties to a relationship if they are both committed to saving and improving the relationship. If one of them is in doubt, I'm not sure I want to stay with him. Well, then he needs his own coach or therapist. And people will understand that. They'll get that right away. They might ask you to do it because they just don't know who else to turn to. Or they trust you so much and they like you so much that they want you to take this on. But that doesn't mean that you have to. In working with a couple, I can work very successfully with one. I can work very successfully with both when they have a common goal. And I will often separate them. I will say to them, well, I'll give you a scenario. A couple came to me last year. They were referred to me by a coach who was working with the couple's daughter. The husband had a stroke. He was in his late 50s and had a very debilitating, life-threatening stroke. They were not getting along. Now, he was 1 year, maybe 2 years past the stroke, and they were bickering a lot, and they never had before. They were both committed to the marriage, but they wanted to get some, they wanted to stop the bickering and enjoy themselves. And as it turned out, I worked with both of them once or twice, and I found out that it was a pretty serious stroke. The wife was left with a lot of stress over this. She picked and fussed at him all day long. You know, he went out to go bike riding, and that worried her. All the things he did to try and he was forced into retirement. He had been a lawyer, but cognitively he had not been able to continue, and he was close enough to retirement age. They had enough money. He just went ahead and retired. But in light of that, she was very worried about him all the time. So what happened was I worked with the two of them and found out what was going on, and then I worked with her alone for 3 or 4 sessions. I worked with him for 1, maybe 2 sessions, and then I brought them back together, and they were happy campers. The wife was so stressed out and had never been heard on how terrible it was to go through this. He had the stroke right in her presence. She had to call emergency services. He almost died a couple of times, and she was terribly traumatized by this and had never talked to anybody about it because all the attention went on him, pulling him through and making him better, and that's what the kids were concerned with and the medical system was concerned with, and she had just stuffed all this down and kept it there. And once I was able to support her in airing her deep fears, and one session, she just about spent the whole session crying. And in 3 or 4 sessions, maybe 6 altogether for both of them, they were fine. It worked beautifully. But I made sure at every point I explained to them what I was doing, why I wanted to work with them separately, and made sure they still had common goals all the way through. They wanted to do better in their marriage. And I haven't heard from them. It's been 1.5 years or so. So it was very successful. Now, these were both bright, well-functioning people. They didn't have a lot of, you know, depression, anxiety, upset, dysfunctional behaviors before this happened. So they were relatively easy to work with. But you see the difference in that scenario from this one, where we've got a teenager. Teenagers, she might just be going through her stuff and be hostile with mom anyway, even if the marriage was still intact and there had never been a divorce. You know, the 14-year-old girl, I don't know how many of you have raised 14-year-old girls, but I raised one, and it was one of the most challenging parts of my life. I'm happy that she's not 14 anymore. Okay, let's come back to our scenario. The universality. Would I do this option with every client? And we want you to consider this because sometimes people will say, oh, I'm going to make an exception. She can come stay in my guest room for a while. You know, I'm going to let her share my office space for a while. It'll be fine. So you want to find out, would you do this with every client? And that's part of your ethical decision making. And how would I feel if this got in the newspaper, on Facebook, or other members of the coaching profession found out I was doing this, you know? I invited my client over and we got drunk together. Would I want people to know about that? Probably not. So we want to consider that. Finally, we want to consider the body compass and whether we've got any square one issues to resolve that might be getting in our way of clearly thinking about this. Do I have any, like, oh my God, I need the money so bad, I've got to work with this girl going on, or our own mother stuff is getting triggered by this? We want to really check in with ourselves and work that through. So what's our vote here, you guys? What are we going to do?
Stick with the mom. Work with the mom.
Yeah. Anyone have a different opinion about what they would do? Because, again, this is, you know, there's judgment calls here. There's no black or white. There's no manual that tells us do this or do that. Okay. Well, there you have it. That's how the ethical decision-making model works. Should you have an issue in the future, please work it through. Like I said, Renee and I are always available for an ethics consult. We do it free of charge as a service to the community, and because we just want to encourage everybody to have good ethical standards in place. If you are going to consult with us, we're probably going to ask you, if it's not an emergency, to think through these issues on your own first, and then when we talk, you'll have a lot of this already thought through. So any questions about how the ethical decision-making model works?
I think it's going to be a matter of practice here.
Yeah. Now, you know, if you're screening well, you're not going to have a lot of, you're not going to have this coming up often, you know, every now and then. So, good, good. Anyone have any other questions about anything? Well, when do you guys finish up LCT? When's your last class?
End of July.
August 1st, I think.
Boy, oh boy, it's coming right up. Download your recordings, everybody. You're going to want to have them when you go for certification. You know, they're really valuable to have to help you review, to prep for it. In parting, I just want to say this. There might be some of you who are sad about the end of LCT coming up, like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm having such a good time here. I want to assure you guys, it gets better and better and better. And I'm like 8-9 years out from when I first trained with Martha, and I'm still friends with many of the people, close friends. I mean, lifelong close friends. Bridget Boudreau and I went through the basic training with Martha before she had MBI. It was still being done under another. It was a 3 days in a hotel room in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it was a very different training. And both of us somehow figured out, notwithstanding the training we didn't get, we both figured out enough to get us where we are now. And Bridget is a very competent coach. She's also one of my closest friends. And so that's going to happen to you guys. There are people in your cohort here that you are going to be lifelong friends with. And the more you coach, the better this gets. And the more you work through your own issues, the better you are going to feel. So just keep your hopes up that it gets better. This is not the end of something when you finish. It's the beginning. I want to tell you one more thing here. I may sound like I know what I'm doing now, but I assure you I didn't have this level of being articulate, this ability to communicate so clearly about these issues when I started. I was very awkward. I tried and failed many, many, many times. I made lots of mistakes. But as I stayed with it, as I over and over again, I began to see patterns. I explained the coaching framework so many times that it began to get easy to me, and I didn't have to look at my notes anymore to explain how circumstances drive thoughts, which drive feelings, which drive behavior. And that's one of the things I always explain to clients in the first or second session, if I haven't already done it in our pre-coaching consult. So you do things over and over, and you find the words that work for you and the large themes. And you discover what you can let go of, what you don't have to do anymore. The first few people I coached, I used to explain if I was going to do the work, I would tell them the life history of Byron Katie and how she woke up on the floor of the halfway house in a state of bliss when she realized that her thoughts were creating all of her stress and upset and misery, and she's been a happy, happy person ever since. My clients don't need to know that. It takes up time out of the session. If they're so fascinated by that tool, I can refer them to the book. But really what my clients in my practice are fascinated by is whether they're feeling better or not, whether I've found a way to help them do that. So I want to make every minute count. But again, I had to learn how to do that the hard way, and it came with time. And it came with my own personal transformation. I told the class this morning, and I'm going to tell you guys, I spent 25 years in courtrooms, almost 25 years, before I made this transition. And when I started working, talking about things like kindness and love and spirituality, that was very awkward for me to talk about, because I had no language and no experience with that. It's now very easy for me to talk to a client about things like that. I changed. You will change. So just treat yourselves with so much kindness and so much compassion as you unfold and as you soften and as you grow into this. You know, we're all human. We're all doing the best we can. And you will get there. You will get really good with this stuff. You'll be more and more articulate with it. Just practice and be kind with yourself along the way. So any questions? Okay, well, that's all I've got tonight for you guys. Yes. I will be monitoring the forum in case you have any other questions. Feel free to post them there. And thank you guys so much for being here tonight and for your participation in the conversations we've had and your great questions. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks.
That was great.
All right. You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.